Welcome back. I'm your host, and I'm so glad you could join us for another deep dive.
And I'm the resident technical expert here, ready to get into it. It's great to be back.
Yeah, so today we're heading out of the office, we're going way off the paved roads, and we're stepping right into the dirt, the dust, and, well, the noise.
A lot of noise.
A whole lot of noise.
Yeah.
We're exploring the hidden high-stakes world of heavy-duty electrical equipment.
Specifically in some of the harshest environments on Earth.
Right. We're talking about places like massive open-pit mines, sprawling agricultural operations, remote off-highway construction sites, you know, the really rugged stuff.
It's a completely different world out there when it comes to keeping machinery running.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, you might look at a massive 50-ton dump truck or a colossal combine harvester, and you assume that if something takes it down, it has to be a catastrophic engine failure.
Right, like a massive structural break, a snapped axle, a blown transmission, something huge.
Exactly. But the reality is actually much more subtle. And honestly, it's a lot more frustrating for the people who actually manage these fleets.
And that's the real mystery here. The mission of our deep dive today is to figure out why these massive, incredibly rugged machines are so often brought to their knees by the absolute smallest electrical component.
A tiny stuff.
Yeah. And more importantly, we're going to look at how smart, deliberate engineering solves this problem.
Right.
So we're pulling our insights today from a really comprehensive technical guide and a specification article, and this was all provided by Ferrison.
It's a great piece of source material.
It really is. It's all about choosing the right heavy-duty electrical equipment for these brittle sites. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Because reading through this source material, it becomes clear really fast that picking a starter or an alternator for a mining truck isn't just about grabbing a part out of a catalog based on horsepower.
No, not at all. And that's the perfect place to start. Fundamentally, selecting this equipment isn't just about reading a spec sheet.
Or checking a box for voltage and output.
Right. As the Ferrison documentation points out, it is a critical reliability decision.
A reliability decision. I like that.
Because in these heavy-duty industries, incorrectly specified components lead to repeated electrical faults.
Which translates to incredibly difficult troubleshooting for the mechanics.
And ultimately, unnecessary and wildly expensive downtime. I mean, think about the financial stakes here for a second.
They're huge.
A massive haul truck might cost thousands of dollars an hour to operate. But it's not just that one truck.
Right, there's a domino effect.
Exactly. If that truck breaks down at a critical choke point in an open pit mine, it halts the entire mining sequence.
Wow.
The loaders have nothing to load into, the processing plant down the line runs out of material, and suddenly a bad electrical connection has literally paused a million-dollar daily operation.
That is insane. To really understand those stakes, I think we need to contrast what these machines go through every single day with what you and I experience.
Yeah, let's ground it a bit.
So think about your daily commute in a standard passenger vehicle. You're driving on sealed asphalt roads.
Sure, you might hit a pothole.
Or drive through a rainstorm, yeah. But it's a relatively pristine environment. The suspension absorbs most of the shock, and the engine bay stays relatively dry.
Now, take a heavy-duty machine.
Right. The specs we're looking at list the punishing elements these electrical systems have to tolerate routinely, and it reads like an extreme obstacle course.
It really does.
We're talking about continuous bone-rattling, high-frequency vibration.
Massive amounts of fine dust that gets into microscopic crevices.
Heavy water ingress during torrential rain, or those high-pressure maintenance washdowns.
Add to that mud, thick oils, harsh chemical exposure.
And just the sheer mechanical impacts from bouncing over rough, uneven terrain all day long.
It is an unbelievably brutal operating environment. And what's fascinating here is that because of all those extreme factors, the failures in these environments are rarely sudden.
They aren't.
No, they're rarely catastrophic, sudden blowouts. A component doesn't usually just explode out of nowhere while the machine is idling.
Okay, so what happens?
Instead, the failures develop gradually. It's a slow death by a thousand tiny cuts.
A slow death.
Yeah. We're looking at mechanical fatigue over thousands of operating hours, slow creeping corrosion that eats away at contacts, and gradual insulation damage that nobody notices until it's too late.
Actually, the source material gives a really specific, highly relatable example of this slow death that I want to share with you because it paints such a clear picture.
Oh, the harness routing example.
Yes. Imagine a wiring harness, just a bundle of electrical cables supplying power to a sensor, and it's routed across a metal chassis bracket.
Okay.
Now, Say it was installed without proper abrasion protection. On day one, it works perfectly. Month one, it's totally fine.
Right, no issues.
But slowly, over hundreds of hours of that continuous high-frequency vibration we talk about, the harness rubs against the bracket.
It's back and forth.
Yeah, it just vibrates and rubs, millimeter by millimeter, wearing through the plastic protective insulation.
And eventually, that insulation is entirely gone. The exposed copper conductor inside the wire finally touches the bare metal of the chassis.
Wait, so the machine is totally fine when sitting in the shop, but the second it hits a bump on the site, that exposed copper taps the metal and the whole system shorts out.
Precisely. You get this intermittent electrical fault that drives mechanics absolutely crazy.
I can imagine.
Because think about their troubleshooting process. They pull the massive machine into a brightly lit, perfectly still maintenance bay.
Okay.
They plug in their diagnostic computers. Since the machine isn't moving, the bare wire isn't touching the metal frame.
So the computer says everything is fine.
Exactly. The system shows zero errors. The mechanic sends it back into the field. The operator hits a rut in the dirt road. The chassis twists just a fraction of an inch.
And the wire touches the metal again.
Yep. The machine throws a critical error code and completely shuts down.
That sounds like a nightmare to diagnose. You'd spend hours just chasing a ghost.
You really would. And that specific scenario highlights a massive paradigm shift in how we need to think about electrical design for harsh sites.
House.
It requires engineers and fleet managers to consider both the component itself, so the physical quality of the wire, and the physical installation practices.
Like how that wire is routed, clamped, and protected.
Exactly. You simply can't separate the electrical engineering from the mechanical reality of the environment.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's transition over to the heavy hitters of the electrical system, the big power players.
The starters and alternators.
Right. Starting with heavy-duty starters. When you're dealing with a massive diesel engine in a piece of mining or agricultural equipment, you need an unbelievable amount of torque to crank that engine over.
Oh, definitely. It's fighting immense internal compression, especially if it's sitting in freezing temperatures.
Right.
The starter has to reliably produce that massive rotational force, survive repeated start cycles without the internal coils overheating, and then withstand the constant engine vibration once the machine is actually running and just going about its day.
But here is a highly counterintuitive fact highlighted in Ferrison's documentation.
What's that?
In heavy equipment applications, starter failures are very often caused by mechanical factors, not internal electrical faults.
Right, which surprises a lot of people.
Here's where it gets really interesting. You'd naturally assume the electrical coils inside would burn out from the sheer effort, but the guide points out that the real enemies are things like loose mounting bolts.
Or vibration-induced bracket movement.
Exactly. If those heavy mounting bolts loosen even a fraction of an inch because of the constant shaking, the entire starter housing shifts.
It loses its precise mounting alignment with the engine's ring gear.
And for those visualizing this, the ring gear is that massive, heavy-toothed wheel attached to the engine's flywheel.
It's what the starter actually engages with to spin the engine.
Right. Once that misalignment occurs, the smaller gears on the starter don't mesh cleanly with the massive teeth on the ring gear.
So every time the operator turns the key, they're basically grinding metal on metal at slightly the wrong angle.
Exactly. This mechanical misalignment leads to the premature grinding, chipping, and catastrophic wear of both the starter drive itself and that heavy ring gear.
And replacing a ring gear often requires pulling the engine or the transmission.
Yeah, you're suddenly doing a massive multi-day mechanical teardown, all because a single mounting bolt vibrated loose and compromised the electrical component's function.
It's incredible how that compounds. But starters are only half of the power equation. We also need to look at what happens once the engine is actually running, the alternator.
Right. The alternators are really the unsung heroes of these machines, aren't they?
Absolutely.
They're spinning constantly, supplying all the electrical power required for the vehicle while it operates. And on a modern machine, that is an enormous load.
Oh, it's massive.
We're talking high-intensity stadium-level lighting systems for night work.
All the computerized control electronics.
Dozens of environmental sensors. And the heavy-duty HVAC systems keeping the operator cool in a 110-degree desert environment.
They're absolutely the beating heart of the electrical system during operation. And getting the specification right here is a really delicate balancing act.
Because you have to consider the continuous output relative to the machine's total electrical load.
Right. You also have to factor in how well the alternator performs at low engine idle speeds, its cooling effectiveness when it's literally caked in dust, and its overall voltage stability.
There are so many variables.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a common and devastating field issue occurs when the electrical demand of the machine simply exceeds the alternator's capacity to generate power.
So what happens then? Does the whole machine just power down if you turn on too many lights?
Not immediately. When the alternator can't provide enough power to run the lights, the air conditioning, and the sensors all at once, the vehicle's battery has to step in and continuously compensate for that deficit.
Oh, wow. So the battery is essentially draining while the machine is actively running.
Yes.
That makes sense. It's like your phone dying even while it's plugged in because you're running too many heavy apps and the charger just can't keep up.
That's a great way to think about it. And in a piece of heavy machinery, this leads to chronic undercharging,
which eventually results in premature battery failure.
Exactly. The fleet manager ends up replacing expensive batteries constantly, assuming they bought a bad batch, when the real root cause is that the alternator was underspecified for the reality of the machine's workload.
And just like with the starters, the physical mounting of the alternator is a huge failure point.
Right.
The documentation notes that alternators mounted on poorly supported brackets are exposed to continuous violent vibration.
Over time, that relentless shaking can literally crack the heavy metal housing of the alternator.
Or vibrate the delicate internal voltage regulator until it completely shatters.
It's a harsh reminder that an electrically perfect component, one that bench tests flawlessly in a factory, will still fail miserably if its mechanical mounting can't handle the realities of a mining site.
Which brings us to the physical backbone of the whole vehicle. The wiring harnesses and the connectors.
The veins and joints of the machine.
Exactly. Carrying power and data everywhere it needs to go. The source material spends a lot of time on wiring harnesses and specifically points out the danger of what they call long unsupported harness runs.
To understand why that's so dangerous, you really have to visualize the physics at play.
Okay, paint a picture for us.
If you have a long, heavy cable suspended between two points on a vibrating machine, that cable is going to whip and sway.
Naturally.
That continuous swaying motion concentrates all the mechanical stress right at the ends of the cable, specifically at the connector terminations where the wire meets a solid plug.
Think about the charging cable for your phone. If you bend it back and forth at the plug enough times, the wires inside eventually snap, right?
Yep. Happens all the time.
Now scale that up to a thick copper cable on a vibrating mining truck. That's what they mean by conductor fatigue.
The copper strands inside the heavy insulation literally snap one by one until the entire connection fails completely.
And the preventative measures required to stop this are surprisingly extensive. It's not just about buying thicker wire.
No, the guide emphasizes correct conductor sizing, of course, but also using specific insulation materials rated for extreme temperature fluctuations.
From freezing mornings to boiling hot afternoons.
You also need serious abrasion protection. We're talking heavy-duty nylon braiding or thick corrugated plastic conduit.
And then there's the routing strategy itself.
Right, you can't just zip tie it wherever it fits.
You have to secure the harness away from sharp structural edges and hot hydraulic components, using heavy-duty support clamps at regular intervals so the wire physically can't whip around in the first place.
And providing that strain relief is absolutely crucial as the harness approaches the connectors. Connectors are massive failure points in harsh environments.
They really are the weak link.
Because they're the vulnerable intersections where electrical contacts meet mechanical stress and environmental exposure all at once.
A connector has to provide a perfectly reliable electrical contact while getting shaken violently. And it has to maintain a watertight, airtight seal against microscopic dust and pressurized moisture.
It's a tall order.
The Ferrison specs mention the need for corrosion-resistant terminals and positive locking mechanisms. But I noticed they put a huge emphasis on something called secondary locking features.
Yes, secondary locking features are essential out in the dirt.
How do they work?
To picture this, think about a standard plastic connector snapping together. You hear a click, that's the primary lock.
Okay.
In a normal car, that's enough. But without a secondary lock, which is usually an additional plastic wedge or a sliding mechanism that physically prevents the primary lock from moving, the constant high-frequency vibration of a piece of heavy machinery can literally back the tiny metal terminal pins right out of the plastic housing.
And the worst part is how deceptive that failure can be.
Oh, absolutely.
A connector might look perfectly plugged in from the outside. The plastic housing is still snapped together. But inside, Because of the microvibrations over 10,000 hours, the metal pins have pulled back just enough to cause a partial contact loss.
Or maybe the internal rubber seal has shifted just enough to let a microscopic amount of moisture ingress.
Suddenly, you have intermittent faults and voltage drops, and visually, from the outside, everything looks perfectly fine.
And a voltage drop in a complex system is insidious. For you listening, think of a voltage drop like a kinked water hose.
Okay, good analogy.
You have plenty of pressure at the spigot, but barely a trickle coming out the nozzle. In a machine, a poor connection creates resistance, eating up the electrical pressure before it reaches a sensor or a control module.
That visual deception, where a part looks fine but is failing internally, is exactly what makes troubleshooting so time-consuming.
It perfectly illustrates why electrical reliability is rarely determined by the quality of just one component. Synthesizing all of this, the most profound takeaway from the source material is that major failures almost always occur when multiple small weaknesses combine within the system.
So what does this all mean? How do these tiny weaknesses actually compound to take down a massive piece of equipment?
It comes down to system integration. You could purchase a top-of-the-line, ultra-rugged starter, pair it with a high-output alternator, and use expensive heavy-duty connectors. But if they are poorly integrated with each other and the chassis, the system still fails.
Wow.
And perhaps the most underestimated villain in this entire ecosystem, one that causes endless frustration for technicians, is grounding quality.
I was genuinely surprised by this part of the guide.
Really?
Yeah. It points out that something as incredibly simple as a painted mounting point or a slightly loose earth connection can introduce electrical resistance. And that tiny bit of resistance can cause completely erratic system behavior across the entire machine.
It's a classic oversight. During manufacturing or during a field repair, a well-meaning technician might bolt a heavy ground wire to a beautifully painted chassis frame to ensure a tight fit.
But paint is essentially a plastic barrier. It's a fantastic insulator.
Right. When you bolt a ground wire over paint, it's like trying to force a fire hose amount of electricity through a tiny pinhole. The current gets bottlenecked.
In these heavy equipment electrical systems, properly prepared grounding points with clean, bare metal contact and subsequent corrosion protection applied afterward are absolute must-haves for stable operation.
Because without that perfect ground, the electricity tries to find another way back to the battery.
Exactly. And when it does that, sensors give wildly false readings, computerized control modules reset randomly while the machine is operating, and starters struggle to engage because they aren't getting the full flow of power.
It's incredible to think that a single drop of paint in the wrong spot can literally halt a million-dollar mining operation.
The operational and financial consequences of downtime in mining and agriculture really are staggering.
They are.
Every single minute a machine spends in the shop being diagnosed for a ghost electrical fault is a minute it isn't moving earth or harvesting crops.
Which is why the proactive engineering principles we've been discussing are so vital.
Better system specification.
Yes. Yeah. Designing for stable charging capacity up front, implementing proper physical strain relief on every harness run, ensuring the correct ingress protection for every single connector, and obsessive attention to clean grounding.
Doing all that massively reduces troubleshooting time. It stops the failures before they ever have a chance to happen.
And for the fleet managers, procurement teams, and engineers out there who are dealing with these exact field issues every single day, the Ferrison Guide makes it clear that specialized help is available.
Right. They specialize in specifying this exact kind of equipment for harsh environments.
The source material notes, you can reach out to them directly via phone at 013-661-5020, through their sales email at sales@ferrison.com, or by visiting their website at www.ferrison.com to ensure you're getting components that will actually survive your specific site conditions.
It's a critical resource because, as we've seen throughout this deep dive, getting the specifications wrong up front is just too costly down the line.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up today, let's recap the main takeaways.
Sounds good.
If you take nothing else away from this deep dive, remember this. Designing and selecting electrical systems for harsh sites means anticipating brutal, relentless vibration.
It means prioritizing mechanical durability just as highly as electrical output.
And it means treating system-level integration, like how a furnace is routed, where it's clamped, and how perfectly clean the bare metal is at a grounding point, just as seriously as the purchase of a major component, like a starter or an alternator.
Every single tiny friction point matters when you're working in the dirt.
It really does.
This raises an important question, though, something for you to really ponder as this industry evolves.
Okay, what is it?
If mere vibration, dust, and a little bit of moisture can slowly dismantle the rugged, heavy-duty electrical systems of today's massive diesel-powered machines, what does the future look like?
That's a huge question.
As we move rapidly toward fully autonomous, fully electric, heavy machinery where there isn't a mechanical diesel engine at all, and the entire vehicle is essentially one giant, incredibly sensitive, high-voltage computer, how will the industry have to completely reimagine these protective measures just to survive the exact same harsh environments?
That is a fascinating thought to leave on. The environment isn't going to get any saucer, but the technology running these sites is getting infinitely more complex.
It's going to be a wild transition.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We hope it encourages you to look a little closer at the invisible interconnected systems holding our mechanized world together. Until next time.